Good morning. As you've gathered for the children's story, we're sitting with the story of walking on water today. And it's a story that we know well. One of those that from little up we're told time and again, and we know what it is and how it is. So much so that it's become an idiom of our common language. Well, he must think that he walks on water. And it's just there in the language, and I'm guessing that a fair number of people who use it from day to day don't even know where it comes from. We're in our Mythbusters stage of watching the old shows of Mythbusters from the Discovery Channel because, hi, it's science, and it's fun, and there's often explosions, but also because they're classics. And one of the myths that they tested was various ways to try to walk on water as ninjas and whatnot. And they came up with some ideas and got a couple of stats, but predictably it didn't quite work out. Not in this way. And not like this. Let's listen again to Matthew's story of encountering Jesus walking on the water. This is from chapter 14 of Matthew, verses 21 through 28. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking towards them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Don't be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and started walking on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened and began to sink. He cried out, "Lord, save me!" Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." I wonder, have you ever heard of Moore's Law? It's actually a concept from the realm of computer science that notes that on average, the number of transistors in an integrated circuit tends to double every 2 years. I bet you wanted to know that this morning, right? And this is important because that's why our gizmos keep getting bigger, smaller and faster and more powerful, because there's more stuff that they can fit into the circuits and make them do the things. and all that's good, and all that's great, and that's part of why it's you never seem to be able to keep a phone for more than 2 years. Because, well, there's something better out there. And at least until recently, this has really held true. They've come up with some technical hurdles now that make it harder to get this improvement. But that's been the way that we expected things to improve. Times two every 2 years. And just for the record, the period at the end of a sentence on a printed page, they can fit 6 million transistors in that period using the most common process that they deal with. Now, I go here not to indulge my ongoing wonkery with all things technical and whatnot. Well, maybe a little bit, but it's not quite the point. I actually go here because we've also had a similar, maybe unwritten assumption that, well, this is how things are. As it is with chits, so it is with humanity. Things get progressively better. We tap more and more of our potential. We get better and better technology. We get better and better ideas. And things keep getting better. And that ambition has driven us with expectation to say, well, the potential that we have is largely untapped and almost limitless. And it's that potential that has occupied the minds of futurists and fantasists alike for decades on end. There are projects that seek to marry the human mind in all its complexity with the minds that we have made as computers, and not just AI. How would you like to just think Alexa do this instead of having to open your mouth and say it? I think I've read enough science fiction to know that that's probably a bad idea. For good or bad, we expect human capacity to always be able to meet the demands that are there. And the basic premise is, if we would just go beyond our limits, there is nothing that we couldn't achieve. And we even cross this over into the spiritual realm. And I'll be the first to say that, yes, if we would trust, if we would reach out, if we would dare to hope in all that God can do in us, there would be much that we could receive. But there's also some wisdom in saying, at the end of the day, we too are just humans. And we have limitations. And that is good. And that is there. And we can even get in trouble if we ignore the fact that human potential, as great as it is also an utterly limited thing. This is how we often encounter this story of walking on water. It's a story of wasted human potential. And we've reached to it with the notion of, well, what if Peter would have gotten it right? What if Peter wouldn't have looked down, saw the waves, and freaked out and started to sink? And if you can only get it right, you too can walk on water. if you can only trust enough and don't take your eyes from Jesus, you too can do anything. To be Peter's, daring to step out of our boat, and daring to trust Jesus in all the things and see spectacular results. And again, that's true. But it's also not problems. Because here the focus becomes Peter and not Jesus. And the message becomes the little disciple who could, had he just kept on walking, as opposed to what is Jesus doing? We can always be challenged to take new steps in our faith. Yet, the very basic diagnosis of faith, when the storms of life have come for us, which they do with frequency and ferocity, is that oftentimes, well, the storms are the moments where you are to be tested and to prove your faith one way or another. And with enough faith, you can walk all the way to the other side. And the trick with this is it takes us to some fairly uncomfortable places. Because logically, if our faith is a measure of how we perform, then what does it mean if we find ourselves afraid in the storm? What does it mean if we are weary of walking out of the boat? What does it mean if we do have faith and the storm gets stronger still? Well, by this logic, it seems, well, we took our eyes off the ball. We took our eyes off the prize. We didn't realize the potential that we have as want-to-be Peters. Which is not much of a comfort when all you are after is for someone to make the storm stop, or at the very least to come and be in the boat and let us know that somehow everything will be all right. In some ways, reading this with the eye towards human potential here brings us to a tougher place than simply being in the storm in the first place. Because it doesn't allow us to be in the storm without saying, well, maybe the storm is a failure of my potential and my ability to transcend what's going on and to have adequate faith. Another way to phrase this problem is, where is there room for Jesus as Savior and friend, if the responsibility for us lies to acquire adequate faith to do all the stuff that Jesus does? Isn't that just another version of the humanistic atheism that is now all the rage? God may be real, but God, well, we're more mature now. We don't need God. We can take care of ourselves. He's good and all, he's out there, but we get around to God in the end, but by and large, we don't need to trust God when we can trust ourselves. There's belief there, but there's not life there. I think this is a temptation, especially for who place a huge amount of emphasis on the emulation of the life of Christ. Our purpose in the world is to be as Christ-like as we may at all times. And this is a worthwhile and worthy project. We come from a stock a breeze of faith must show itself in life as over against being just a passive faith that is so prevalent and so dangerous. Yet, wanting to be like Christ also has its hazards. Because the extreme of this can lead us to the notion that there's no goodness that is sufficiently good and no ethics that are sufficiently pure enough to make us the truest of true believers. And that the failings of the body, many though they may be, are not necessarily the failings that God will work with us through than simply humans not being diligent enough or working hard enough. There is a reason why we spend so much time building the ties between the inspiration for faithful living and the Spirit who authors it and sustains it. We live faithfully not because this is us, but because it's the Spirit in us that calls us to do so. And that's important. Or to put it another way, it's not about us, but it's about what God is doing, and that makes all the difference. Our faith is proved by the life we lead, not by the stunts that we execute, faithful or not. We might walk on water, but only because the Lord wills it. With all that out there, what then does Matthew have to say to us about Peter walking on the water? I think that there are several things for us here. First of all, we need to know what's going on here. Jesus is appearing in the middle of the night, in the middle of the storm, in the middle of a lake. And the disciples, including, they're dealing with the supernatural here in the walking on water, but they're not quite sure what sort of supernatural they're dealing with here. And this whole come to me on the water thing is ultimately Peter's idea. Did you catch that in the story? Lord, if it is you, command me to come. Peter here is not trying to demonstrate faith, but he's just trying to demonstrate, is this Jesus or is this the ghost that we think he is? If it is, come to be here. Nobody put him up to this except Peter. And it's a great story of great faith, but it's as much about Peter being Peter, extension, humans being humans, than anything else. Perhaps this is Peter demonstrating his lack of faith, requiring a proof of Jesus by simply making things harder than they needed to be. And reminding us of our human inclination to make things hard and to perform all the time. I don't know about you, but that rings true to me. If there's a way to go about being faithful, I will probably find the hardest way to do it possible, because that's just how I roll. And that's just how I want to be. And I think I'm not alone in that. Second, we need to be reminded that we do believe what we see. We can get so focused on the miracle of walking on water And we forget the other circumstances at play. Disciples are scared witless with everything going on around them. But they see their doom so many times that they believe that that's what they are facing. Their failure here is not necessarily to step out and walk on water with Jesus and to join him where they find him, but to recognize that it is possible that God can be with us in the storm. It's possible that even in the rocky waters where we are terrified, God can be there. Most often we conflate the calm seas and the easy ride with the presence and the approval of God. And yet here's Jesus coming and being where they least expect him. They give in to the most human of frailties and hold that's the only reasonable place that God can be. And they fail to engage the imagination that God can come and be wherever God will be. And that's one of the most pervasive things that is there. And one of the most pervasive notions that we hold in our lives when we're looking for our God and our salvation. We assume that we have to get to point X before God can ever even show up, when God can be there the whole time. The third thing that I think we can hold on to here is our need to remember what Jesus does all the time. The failure here is a memory more than anything else. Most of the time, when we find ourselves in the storm, when we find ourselves in crisis, we're far better off remembering what Jesus has done for us first before wondering about what is there and what could be now. Because by remembering what Jesus has already done for us, we can then rest in, and maybe Jesus might do this now. I can't tell you how many times in life I've concluded that there would be no way to make it through to the other side. One is fairly simple. The last time I checked, my database has over 500 or so sermons that I've preached over the course of my career, and that's not all of them. Yet, usually Monday afternoon, and several times through the week, you will find me at least entertaining the notion that there is no possible way that I will have anything to say on Sunday. There is absolutely no way that the words are going to come. And I'll be honest, sometimes this comes on Saturday night, as you're quite sometimes literally beating your head against the wall to find something to come. But the words do come. These hundreds of times and many other times beyond that, the words have been there. Not always the words that I would have chosen, not always the words that I'm happy with, not always the performance that I'm happy with, but the words came. Thanks be to God. But yeah, guess what I do next week? It might not come. What am I going to do? All I have needed, your hand has provided. How quickly are we to forget that? One would hope that we might begin to trust and expect more rather than to simply expect the end of all things all the time. But that's not the case. Sometimes we need to remember that faith is about simply remembering that Jesus is there and will not leave more than anything else. Perhaps when Jesus says to Peter, "O ye of little faith," he isn't talking about his getting his sandals wet. Maybe instead he was simply reminding Peter of who were you dealing with in the first place? They have seen Jesus cure all those who came to him, causing amazement wherever he goes. They have wondered why the demons obey him. They have seen him calm waves before, just several times before this. And just this afternoon, right before this going away, and that's the crowds that he was showing to the door when they got on the boat, he fed 5,000 people with 12 baskets left over. And now they find themselves in the middle of the seas, and of course the one who is coming their direction has to be a ghost. Perhaps it's just forgetting, well, who did you expect anyways? Because we're awfully good at forgetting. Lutheran pastor Nadia Bowles Weber asked, "Faith isn't you doing the impossible. It is remembering that God can and has and will do the impossible. To know faith is to know that God is God and we do not have to be." Let me give you that last sentence one more time. To know faith is to know that God is God and we do not have to be. I don't know about you, but that is good news. So friends, the expectation is not for us necessarily to walk on water. If the storms of life are raging for you at this moment, I invite you to remember, the winds are terrifying and the waves can crash, but that does not mean that God is far off. We can forget what God has done. And it can be hard to hear Jesus' invitation to take courage over the roar of what we are sure is going to come and kill us. But we need that love for ghosts instead of God. Instead, we can look and wonder and say, well, where might God even be here? And we can never have to hesitate to say, "Lord, save us," and wonder whether salvation is indeed on the way. For when you do, that's what happens. The Lord saves us. maybe not as we would have designed or in the time frame that we had in mind or in the way that is there, but God catches us all the same. And God never tires of finding us and saving us and rescuing us, even in the midst of the storm. That is something we can trust, we can hope in, and we can know. For that is the way of God.